Hello, hello, and welcome to another edition of the Retail Gazette Unpacked podcast. I'm your host, Kieran Howells, and today we are talking all things trust. Not just in a nebulous sense, we're talking about the trust that you build between yourself and your customer, and how fragile that relationship potentially is. There's an awful lot of responsibility on retailers to really utilize trust as a key lever in driving relationships between themselves and their customers. And I have a phenomenal guest to talk with me on this subject. Her name is Rebecca Grimes. She's the Chief Revenue Officer at ShareID, a company that deal very much in this area. And she's going to share some real life examples of what it means to not only build trust, but break it too. I cannot wait for this conversation. It's going to be really fantastic. So let's go ahead and dive straight in.
Hello, I'm Rebecca Grimes, the Chief Revenue Officer at ShareID, and I have the privilege and honor of leading our customer-facing teams, which includes sales, marketing, customer success, and revenue operations, and we're about 100 people strong. My role at ShareID is really rooted in the last 15 years of my passion, which is helping brands really create these authentic and lasting relationships with their most valuable audiences. And at ShareID, what we do through our audience data platform is foster trust and enhance loyalty and drive growth behind the scenes to support brands really cultivating that emotional loyalty connection with their customers that keeps them coming back, word of mouth marketing in action, and really driving that lifetime value that everybody aspires to achieve.
Amazing. Well, it's a real pleasure to be speaking to you, Rebecca. Thank you so much for making the time. I'll dive in with a question for you then. So obviously, a big aim for all e-commerce retailers is keeping people on site. And there are so many distractions in this world that getting someone to stay with you and engage with you can be very challenging. We are talking largely in this conversation about verification, which is, of course, an essential part of retail. But I think probably lots of our listeners are underestimating how important that verification piece is. Can you kind of spell it out to us?
So verification is often seen as a box to check. And what I mean by that is that there are several different ways for a brand to identify an audience member. And in many of those cases, there is a presumptive, prove to me that you are who you say you are. But it is actually more than just that, because there are lots of ways for people to work around a system in order to, especially in the age of AI, in order to present themselves as a member of an audience that they actually don't belong to. And it really is this pivotal moment in the customer journey. You know, the goal is to make sure that there is a frictionless process as they are identifying themselves to redeem an exclusive offer, whether they're a student or an educator or a healthcare worker. It is about building a relationship. It isn't a transaction. It is the beginning of a journey, and it is a real opportunity to deepen trust. So if you are a member of that audience, your passion is about identifying value-driven brands who make you feel seen and appreciated and acknowledged. And when there are folks that are included in that audience that aren't actually members of that, there is a degradation of trust that erodes with that brand between the true recipients of that experience or that deepened loyalty that you're trying to achieve. And so the key is to really stop thinking about that promotion as a single transaction and really identifying a way to authoritatively verify that who you are trying to target is in fact a member of that audience, and begin a journey that is around lifecycle marketing and building loyalty and trust that will carry you not only through that initial transaction, but will, as evidenced by all of the brands that we work with, increased purchase frequency, increased average order value, word of mouth marketing and the way that they evangelize your brand with their colleagues and students. They're probably one of the most viral and word of mouth audiences that we support today. And they will share experiences with their friends who then also seek out your brand as a very similar experience as well.
Obviously, as you say, word of mouth, building trust, and then that trust being shared is such a fundamental thing for retailers. If someone has a bad experience, you can guarantee that their network is probably going to lose trust as well. I'm really interested in why people underestimate the cost of sending consumers off-site for verification. Because as a consumer, the benefit of keeping someone on site seems so clear. So is it just that that has been historically a necessary evil? What is it that's preventing people from really, truly appreciating what they're doing there?
I think in many ways, the market that serves the verification process is fractured in the way that at Sheer ID, we genuinely believe in our commitment to supporting brands. This is their data. This is the consumer sharing their data with the brand for them to then action on and build that customer lifetime loyalty. And so by design, our solution is frictionless and is seamless embedded inside a brand's website. So there is no need to take somebody off site to complete that verification process. But some of the other solutions in this space are also looking at how they are building a community of those audience members to then retarget with other brand content. And that really is a fundamental difference between the business value that we bring to the table, because we genuinely believe that the relationship is not between Sheer ID and the consumer. The relationship is between the brand and the consumer. And what we know confidently is that there is at least a 20% abandonment rate of a process when you do something that adds an incremental step, like taking somebody offsite from the brand's website to complete a transaction. And so when you're in that moment of consideration, we all know this, you know, every time that a page takes longer to load, or you add something to your cart and it doesn't actually appear in your cart, those are all these moments of hesitation that you are introducing into the consumer's purchasing behavior. And so having been in this industry for 15 plus years, we have studied this. And what we confidently know is that the highest conversion rates happen when it feels transparent that the brand is the one that is presenting that verification workflow to identify those audience members. And then you immediately are able to transact in a very frictionless, seamless process. And so we've designed our business with our brands at the core, and it is their consumers, not our consumers, at the end of the day.
That's an incredible stat. We are, of course, in retail, all consumers as well as within the retail industry. And so we all know that emotional feeling of kind of getting fed up with a laborious checkout process, or even a laborious process in general within e-commerce. So it does make sense, but my goodness, that is a very high stat. That's a lot of potential business off the table. Not only that initial purchase, which someone may begrudgingly make even if the process has been frustrating, but that person is never coming back, are they?
It is more transactional than emotional loyalty connection, because what consumers are increasingly expecting from the brands that they choose to do business with is alignment of values, trust and confidence, that I am sharing information with you that will be protected and used appropriately. And so again, that is why we deeply believe that we are a facilitator of that beginning of the emotional loyalty journey that the brand is taking that consumer on. And so what we know confidently, just based on, again, all of the stories that we hear on behalf of the brands and retailers that we work with, is that they are building life cycle marketing journeys centered around that emotional loyalty connection. There is so much consumer choice today than ever has existed before. You can buy the exact same product for the exact same price at 15 different retail sites. how you choose to engage with that brand is no longer about price. I will personally seek out brands and drive past three other stores that offer that exact same product to go to a brand that aligns with me on my values, that I feel seen, and that there is an acknowledgement of my relationship that I'm building with them. And I think that that's where consumer choice, being at an all-time high, needs to be matched with intention behind the brands and the way that they think about those consumers, not just as a solve for this month's earnings goals, but more on the lifetime value of what are we setting off to design a program around that really builds that trust and confidence early and often. And then that is reinforced in the way that you acknowledge the journey that you're taking that consumer on through the audience that you've identified as they belong into.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only is it that, you know, the plethora of choice out there these days is broader than ever before, but also in the digital realm, trust is at an all-time low as well. You know, so actually you've got these two key elements here that are playing very much off each other. I know, you know, as a consumer, I will not risk my details with a service that I even feel a slightly bit iffy about. As soon as you go from a brand that you trust onto a platform that you haven't heard of, and they're asking you to fill in details or verify yourself, that rings some alarm bells. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see retailers making when it comes to customer identity, data, and that really important trust piece?
Honestly, one of the things that comes to mind is that when I am seeking out a brand, either because I've learned something about them or there's been some word of mouth buzz that gets me curious, and then I go to seek out that brand and begin my first interaction with them, when I am, to your point, being redirected somewhere else to then complete a process, it is eroding that trust from the very beginning. My intention was to share my details and my information with the brand as part of that transaction that will then be curated into loyalty if the brand and retailers are doing this well. And so when you are introducing another step in the process with an unknown partner that you might be working with, that is introducing, to your point, what might I be giving up in order to receive a discount or an exclusive offer, free gift with purchase, free shipping, all of the incentives that are, you know, usually associated with audience identification. What is the give get for the consumer? And sometimes the risk reward is just not there. And so that's where a full cart abandonment can happen, simply by introducing an element of mistrust at the very beginning of a relationship that you're intentionally trying to build. Obviously, you wouldn't have a program in place if you weren't trying to connect with that audience. And so as you are seeing traffic come to your website, this is organic and earned traffic or potentially paid media traffic. Those are consumers that are looking for you. So why send them to another destination and introduce any hesitation in completing that initial transaction with you? Because emotional loyalty doesn't begin with one transaction. It starts with a transaction, and then the burden is on the brand and retailer to thoughtfully think about what they do with that consumer, with the data that they've been provided, in order to pull them into that emotional lifecycle marketing that everyone aspires to accomplish.
I'm really interested in that kind of customer lifetime value, which is so important, isn't it? You don't just want one person one time to come to you. You want that person to come back again and again and build on that emotional relationship that we've been talking about and that trust piece. So how do you think retailers can best build customer lifetime value and ensure that they're not losing those conversions? I mean, obviously, off-site verification is a killer for that. But do you think that actually positive friction in that process on-site is helpful? Or do you think that it's all about just making it as frictionless as humanly possible.
That's definitely the first step in the process, is to make it as frictionless as possible. But basically what you have is consent-driven information and data that the consumer is providing to the retailer. And now it is on the retailer to build out a strategy for making that emotional loyalty connection, which when you establish that, we know confidently that your frequency of purchase goes up. When you are shopping, you are thinking about what other purchases can I make from this brand that I hadn't considered before. And so our data suggests pretty confidently and consistently when customers launch programs, and I actually had the opportunity to be sitting down with one of our US retailers just this week, that they can identify that there is an outspend from general cohorts of existing audience members that they have through, you know, just their general marketing activities, that there is, in some cases, a 2x purchase frequency that happens, and therefore their annual spend with that brand has the potential to go up to 2x and more because of the way that they are actioning on the data. The verification process is about confirming that somebody is a healthcare professional. How you then take that and look at milestones and moments, either through national holidays or time of year where slowing down to give acknowledgement and gratitude is important. How you take those personalization moments that you can now action on because you have access to this data that you were given by a consumer, that's the real key here. When you share something about yourself with a retailer, and they then send you something generic that they send to everybody else, that is a missed opportunity to bring them along on that journey and have them outspend anybody else within your existing database and more frequently purchased than any other consumer that you interact with, because they've given you information that is valuable, and then you have to make them feel seen and heard and acknowledged. And even if it is a one-to-many program that you're executing, there's data tokens that you can execute that make this feel incredibly one-to-one in the eye of the consumer. And that's where that emotional loyalty begins. That is where those moments of consideration, where should I make my next purchase? Oh, this brand makes me feel seen and acknowledged. And even if I'm driving past two other locations, or even if their price is a few dollars more than their competitor, they get my business. And I think that cannot be underestimated, that consumer choice and the way that they spend is less about the price today. Obviously, that is a consideration, but it isn't the only deciding factor that goes into purchase and buying behavior today.
It's so interesting that you should say that, and we're having this conversation today, because literally earlier this week I was reading a really interesting report from a psychology academy, and they were saying that brands can trigger the same kind of emotional connection that people feel with friends and family members. Like, you can build such an emotional connection with a consumer that when your name is mentioned, you're literally lighting up the same parts of the brain as when someone they know and love is mentioned. And that to me highlighted not only the power of actually personalization and being able to, you know, reach out to people and connect with them and build a relationship with them, but also the fragility of that. Because, like, you know, if you're upset with a person, it's very hard to then kind of emotionally reconcile with that. And we're having the same kind of connection with brands. It seems like such an interesting but fragile thing that you can either do something fantastic with or potentially burn that bridge.
That is exactly right. And if you think about where personalization started, it was with little tokens like, when is your birthday, or when is your anniversary, or when did you first join a loyalty program? And those are obvious today. Those are table stakes for consumers that they expect for those things to be acknowledged. Going the extra step in a journey with that consumer, and if you know that they are a student at university and they have shared with you what they are studying, and you acknowledge that as you're doing outreach, whether that's through in-app messaging and personalization of a web experience when they're authenticated and logged in, or through email marketing and other channels, text marketing, all of those are opportunities for you to reinforce that you understand who they are, that you appreciate and acknowledge the journey that they are on with you as a retailer, and you are reinforcing, to your point, that that emotional connection of surprise and delight, where I shared something with you and that wasn't something that I did just to get this discount. It is something that you are using to acknowledge where I'm at. So if you think about that student at university and I'm heading into finals week, and you reach out and you acknowledge, you know, here's a list of products for you to consider as you hunker down and get ready for finals week. Mm-hmm. That makes that, it sounds like a friend reaching out to you, to your point. Gosh, you're going to be having a rough week right now. What do you need from me in order for you to be more successful as you're preparing for your studies? Those little touches seem insignificant, but to your point, the neural pathways in our brain lighting up because it's that right moment, right time of the right message, because you were given permission to engage with that consumer that way, that can drive loyalty well beyond the relationship that you initiated because they were a student. They will not be a student forever. They will eventually graduate and become a professional. And when that experience or that offer or promotion or loyalty program, accelerator, when that goes away, they will not forget the way that you supported them when they were in this other chapter of their life. That is something that they will carry forward and remember. And then it's about how does that retailer carry them from one life cycle of they were a student into now I'm a professional, and potentially I'm a professional in healthcare or government or military. And then how do you capture additional data points through that journey that allows you to continue that emotional bridge that you established early in your first interaction with them? And that's where that genuine authenticity of relationship building comes into play. And it is beyond happy birthday, because when it's your birthday, you have 50 brands in your inbox that are wishing you happy birthday.
That's not the
time where you're focused on emotional loyalty and connection. It is in the non-obvious times where you get to stand out as a brand and really drive that connection that will curate lifetime value.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, that's such an interesting point and a really interesting way of looking at it, and highlights the complexity of what a true customer lifetime journey actually looks like, not just for you, but appreciating their lifetime journey and how you're going to stay with them in that time. It's really interesting. But I did want to ask you on that point, looking at the consumer, do you think that consumers really understand the benefits of giving key information to retailers? Do you think that they understand what they're signing up for? And as a result, how does that or should that influence how retailers think about the data they have on their customers?
So there's obviously standard information and data that a consumer needs to share with a retailer. If you're signing up for a loyalty program, they need your email address, likely your home address, so that they can send you your purchases if you're shopping online. So there is an expected, I'm going to give you some data about me in order for us to have a transactional relationship. When a consumer then shares additional data points with you, and you don't action on them, there's a curiosity. What did you do with that data that I sent you? It's permissioned data. This isn't I've acquired a list of known students, which I actually think has a bit of an ick factor to it. If somebody to reach out to me with a student-specific offer and I'm not familiar with that brand, or I'm not familiar with how they would have known how I am an actual student, that actually can breed distrust. I didn't give you that information. How do you know that about me? But when you actually provide that in a consent-based way, there is an expectation of how are you treating that data? How are you using that data? And when you immediately make that feel valuable to the consumer, there is a likelihood for them to then share incremental additional information with you to further build and curate that relationship. So when I get personalized offers of new products to discover, and they are completely irrelevant to me. And I'll share an example in a second. I actually have a disdain for that brand. When I was pregnant with my first child, I had registered with my baby registry at two different retailers. And so during that process, if you know the gender, you give them, is it a boy or a girl? You give them what your due date is, and then you make a list of all the things that you think you're going to need for that baby. And then my daughter was born, and I realized I didn't have any type of swing in my house, and I didn't know how to set the baby down and get a break. But the one retailer, because they knew I just had a baby, because I shared all of this information with them, 2 days after my due date, sent me a curated list of things that weren't on your registry that you should be thinking about purchasing to make your life easier. The other brand that I had registered with sent me their generic kids email that included bicycles as part of the above the fold display. And so I had this opportunity to choose between these two brands that obviously I had spent money with both of them, and my friends and family had spent money with both of them. But I was then immediately drawn towards the one that made me feel like they understood the exact moment that I was going through, and they were there to help me through that journey. And then I would buy the rest of all of my baby gear onto, you know, toddler gear and equipment and clothing and everything that comes with that, shoes, through that one retailer that made me feel seen at a moment in time where I'd given them all of this information and that other retailer failed me. And it had me, you know, in a moment of frustration where I saw these two polar opposites of, you knew that I just had a baby. There is no, I'm not even thinking about a bicycle. We are 5 years away from thinking about a bicycle. Right now, I haven't slept in a week and I am exhausted and tired. And this other brand was like, you didn't have a swing on your list. I think that I can get a swing to you delivered tomorrow. Just pick one of these out. And it was delivered tomorrow. And that was that emotional connection that drew me into that brand as opposed to pushing me away.
That's such a great example. And as a father of a 4 month old baby, I feel that frustration very deeply.
Exactly. And that's where I think some brands are getting it so right and other brands are just missing the mark. And when you share specific information about yourself and it just is ignored, it makes you question, why did I share that information? And if not for you to deepen a relationship with me, what are you doing with that information? And again, it can really make a consumer choose to no longer shop with you because of those small moments. Consumers are smart and they don't give away their data willingly because they know what happens when they give away their data. And so when they give you that data and you don't action on it, it's such a missed opportunity. And the brands that are getting it right are the ones that are going to continue to grow and thrive despite economic uncertainty and other distractions and priorities that might otherwise have been missed opportunities if they had not been so intentional about the way they think about engaging with their consumers.
That's so interesting because we talk so much about gaining data and we also talk about transactions so much. So this will help get, you know, convert someone, a first-time shopper by X amount. But this is a lot more of a deep conversation about actually intelligently understanding your audience. And it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like actually what you're saying is when you've gained that data, you have a responsibility to use it intelligently or, you know, it degrades in that your relationship with that individual could very well degrade if you're not using it responsibly.
That's exactly the opportunity that retailers have right now with consumer data. That needs to be something that is built into your marketing strategy. And lifecycle marketing isn't a one size fits all anymore. Again, it is expected that I'm going to hear from my brands, happy birthday or happy anniversary or whatever other small data points I would have shared with them. The surprise and delight moments are really the way that you're going to continue to build that trust, that emotional connection with that brand, and why they will seek you out first when they need to make a purchase.
So let me ask you this then. I think that's such an interesting point, and it's very, very important. But where should brands start? Because you can't do everything all at once, and you can't go from sending blanket generic emails to the next day suddenly sending really targeted communications that say, "Hi Joe Bloggs, I know you're in college right now and you've probably got, you know, you've got finals coming up and you bought these things, but you may have missed these things." As much as we'd all love to be able to jump from one of those scenarios to another. So where should retailers start? What's putting your best foot forwards and getting you to a place where that is a viable future for you and your company?
My perspective is to treat it like a relationship that you are building. You wouldn't meet somebody, become friends, and then, to your point, immediately talk about 15 different things that you now know about them in your very next interaction. So I think building out a relationship journey map that talks through gratitude, acknowledgement for becoming part of that brand's consumer base now, and then thoughtfully thinking about, you don't want to hit them the very next day, right? There is a, you know, to try to get another transaction out of them. There is an opportunity for you to authentically communicate, acknowledge the audience that they belong to by leveraging that data, remind them that you make them feel seen and heard, and then be intentional about what might be the next point of an interaction. And then how do you start to pull some of that data into that experience so that you are bringing them on that journey with you and not forcing them to be on that journey? And I think that, again, we all have our promotions tab in Gmail today that I never clean out. I am oftentimes unsubscribing from brands that are reaching out to me daily because I'm not transacting with a specific brand every single day of the week. Mm-hmm. And so when you start to combine purchase and transaction history with this first party and zero party data that the consumers are giving you, and you're being smart about how you leverage that data, right time, right moment, to bridge that relationship and to elicit that second and third and ongoing transaction that breeds loyalty, it doesn't need to be all at once. Don't overwhelm the consumer, because many brands are not doing this today, despite them having a lot of this data inside their organization. I happened to be at a retail event last week in New York, and one of the topics was how consumer shopping has just not evolved in the way that we would expect it to, based on all of the information that is available about a consumer, because many retailers are still thinking one size fits all for mm-hmm. specific groups of audience members at a time where they have more data than ever. And the brands who are standing out that are doing things really well are the ones that are going to continue to thrive and grow. And we're honored and privileged to work with one of those brands. JD Sports comes to mind as one of those brands that is really thoughtfully thinking about how they deliver exceptional customer experience. And they recognize that that data is the foundation of building an exceptional experience that drives that loyalty.
One of the things on your point about, you know, the conversation that you were having in New York, one of those kind of classic phrases that we always hear bandied around is, we're data rich but insight poor. And so, mm-hmm. you know, there's definitely a piece in there as well, isn't there, about actually, it goes back to what we were talking about before, just having the data is no big win, but actually being able to mobilize that data into intelligent outcomes is the real key. And for me, I don't know if you agree, but it feels like we've hit a real turning point there, because the capability to not have innumerable people hours sapping up that process, when actually, so long as your data is strong, you know, augmented like AI and the way that that augments many solutions these days offers the opportunity to go from data rich to insight poor to data rich and insight rich as well.
That is exactly the opportunity of the moment in time that we are in right now. And that was a big topic at the event that I was at, because shopping hasn't evolved to catch up to technology and mass. And so when you have an exceptional experience, it is really hard to find that replicated in other retailers. And obviously there's differentiation that happens when you do have something that is exceptional. You are then drawn to that brand. But now your bar is higher in terms of what you expect that relationship to look like with the other brands that, you know, you're a consumer with. And when they miss the mark with you, again, in the age of AI and agentic shopping and everything that is supporting, I have less time in my life to actually have critical thinking skills to think about where I'm going to spend my money. The obvious choices are going to be the brands that you feel are evolving with you as you are losing critical time in your life. I try to outsource everything that I possibly can. And so that I have as much free time to spend with my family and travel and do the things that matter the most to me. And so the things that I am drawn to from a consumer perspective are where my life is made easier, where the choice is obvious on how I think about the new products that I need to be considering for Christmas for my kids this year, as a for instance. The overwhelmingness that I'm feeling about what are my 9 and 10-year-old really want and need for Christmas this year, a fantastically curated based on my purchase history list that makes it really easy for me to shop, add to cart, get that delivered to my house. Those are the things that really matter today. And again, as we start to think about nearly a third of the next generation of shoppers are in that 18 to 25 range, they're technology savvy. My daughter, who's 9, is in using AI products today in school. And so when you think about the expectation continuing to rise and those brands having access to these insights and then not actioning on them, they're the ones that I think we're going to see in as little as a few years might no longer exist because they're losing consumer trust and they're losing market share by the day if they are not thinking differently about the way that they need to evolve their business.
Yeah. It's something you can literally see playing out in front of you. I mean, the swing example that you gave is just a perfect explanation of that in actual practice. The other thing I wanted to ask you, just in the time that we have left, is we've talked a lot about the brand's responsibility to the consumer, but obviously at Sheer ID, there is a responsibility from your side as well, because if you're handling that really important piece of the verification process, there's a lot of expectation on you as well to make sure that that's being done in a safe and responsible way in a time when, especially here in the UK, we've had loads of, you know, problems with data being accessed by bad actors and things like that. So I just wanted to ask you about that and basically find out how you make sure that your responsibility in this ecosystem of trust is upheld well.
It starts with being transparent about how that customer data is going to be used. And so privacy and terms and condition notices alongside the verification process so that it is explicitly clear how that data is going to be used. And as Sheer ID is a processor in that journey, meaning that we take that information, we then verify that against 200,000 global data sources that we have that are reliable and confidently then delivered back to the brand. So when we say that this is a student, we've actually verified that they're a student at the university that they claimed as part of the verification process to be in attendance at, and that they didn't graduate a few years ago, and they're still trying to see if they can sneak away with a student discount. You then need to be explicitly transparent about how that data is going to be used so that you do not erode trust. So transparency must go beyond just that privacy policy. It should be embedded into the experience itself. It should be clearly articulated that that permissioned zero-party data is going to then, in turn, deliver this clear and relevant and personalized value signals that consumers understand how their information is going to be used responsibly, which ultimately will create a stronger relationship with that brand and earn them the lifetime loyalty that everybody is seeking.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's really good to hear. And unfortunately, we're nearing the end of our time. I'm wondering for a last, I'm going to squeeze in one last question here. I'm going to ask you, and this may seem like a bit of a cheesy question, but I always love to end on a question like this. If you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice about building trust in 2025 and beyond, what would that one piece of advice be?
You need to own your customer relationship. Every interaction is a chance to reinforce trust, and that trust is the real currency of loyalty. don't hand it over to a third party. Don't leave this valuable data on the table and not action on it. Make every interaction, including the very first step of a verification process, seamless, transparent, and on brand, because that is the beginning of that journey. And that's where the real lifetime value is started and then built over time. The data is at the core of how you build that trust. And using that data is how you will continue to grow and thrive and seek out the lifetime value and the generational loyalty that every brand is clamoring for as they think about what their next few years of growth are going to look like.
Amazing. I think that was a really perfect place to conclude. Rebecca, it's been such a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Likewise. Thank you again.